Good morning and welcome to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Paul Lawrence, partner in charge of the IBM Center for the Business of Government. We created the center in 1998 to encourage discussion and research into new approaches to improving government effectiveness. You can find out more about the center by visiting us on the web at www.businessofgovernment.org. The Business of Government Radio Hour features a conversation about management with a government executive who is changing the way government does business. Our special guest this morning is Ambassador Prudence Bushnell, Dean, Leadership and Management School at the Foreign Service Institute. Good morning, Ambassador.
Good morning. How are you?
Great. Thank you. And joining us in our conversation also from IBM is Kim Hintzman. Good morning, Kim.
Good morning, Paul.
Well, Ambassador, let's start by finding out about your current position. I was intrigued as I introduced you. Could you tell us about this position?
As you said, I'm the Dean of the Leadership and Management School, which is one of four schools in the Foreign Service Institute, and our mandate is to provide both leadership and security training for people in the Department of State, both those in Washington and those who are going overseas. It's a wonderful job.
How so?
Because the Department of State is a global organization with 265 branch offices in 180 different countries, employing 30,000 people of different nationalities, with a mandate to create a more secure, democratic, and prosperous world with resources of no more than 1% of the U.S. budget. The job of me and my team is to help civil service employees and foreign service employees deal with the challenges of implementing that mandate. Very complicated, very challenging, and very adventuresome.
Ambassador, that's very interesting. Can you tell us a little bit more about the brief history and overview of the Foreign Service Institute itself?
Let me start by saying that the Foreign Service is actually a fairly new service. It was created in the 20s, the modern Foreign Service in the 20s, and the Foreign Service Institute was created in 1946, originally to provide people with economic training. Now, when you think back of what the U.S. was doing in 1946, we were preparing to become a global power. We were looking at issues of the Marshall Plan and helping Europe recreate itself, so it made sense that people needed to be economically savvy. Since then, however, the Foreign Service Institute has broadened to encompass a number of different issues. We're very well known for the 70 different languages to which we train, but we also provide a lot of tradecraft courses, a lot of seminars to prepare people with children, spouses going overseas. So we are a full-service organization.
Great. So how is the creation of the school related to the evolving profession of diplomacy over the years? I think you started telling us a little bit about that. Can you expand on that some more?
Diplomacy has changed tremendously, particularly since the end of the Cold War. It used to be that one could be a very, very effective diplomat as an individual player. You could make your reputation and do the government's business by your own individual actions vis-a-vis the government or the person whom you wanted to influence. As the U.S. became more of a global power, more and more federal agencies went overseas, and the role of the diplomat was not only to influence one-on-one, but also to provide leadership and a sense of direction to all of the other government agencies overseas. The Leadership and Management School is helping people to do just that, and it shows just how much more complicated our job has become.
Can you tell us what your vision is for the Leadership and Management School?
I would like to see the school continue as a creative and dynamic partner to our colleagues who are implementing this very difficult mandate of creating a more secure, democratic, and prosperous world.
A lot of people talk about leadership and management together in one sentence. What are the key differences between the two?
You know, I don't worry about that too much. Having spent a lot of time doing management training and leadership training, I think some of the differences are artificial. I think that it's more of a difference of emphasis. The leader, if you will, focuses on the direction. The manager focuses on getting there. You hear that leadership is doing the right thing and management is doing things right. You need both in order to be effective, either as a manager or as a leader.
And you don't focus on the difference between, because you think they're both important. I was curious about that comment.
What is more important for me is to look at what behaviors go into leadership, because very often I find that people want to wait until they're in a position of leadership in order to think that they're going to start practicing leadership. Well, if we all wait until we finally arrive at that position with who knows what as a title, without ever having practiced leadership behaviors, then we're not going to be very well prepared. So what I would rather have people do is to look at what are the component behaviors of leadership? And it doesn't matter to me if you call them leadership or management, but what are the component behaviors? How can we practice them regardless of what title we have on our jobs or what position we occupy so that we can be ready for that stellar moment when we are crowned as leader?
Well, do you answer the question for him? What are the component behaviors of an effective leader in your opinion?
I think the key behaviors are interpersonal skills, absolutely key. And when we train to leadership at the Leadership and Management School, we do it from the inside out with the notion that leadership is not about you. Leadership is about the other person. So you can't be so focused on how am I doing, how are people treating me, how do I need to behave. You really need to have a very good sense of yourself and a sense of disciplining yourself and managing your own behavior so that you can focus on the other person and lead the other person in terms of understanding the other person, motivating the other person, setting a sense of direction, and providing the environment that those people need to get their jobs done.
Tell us about your career prior to becoming the dean. How did your earlier positions help prepare you for your current position?
I joined the Foreign Service 23 years ago, and before then, I had been involved in management training and found that when I came into the Foreign Service and went into the administrative work, there was a great deal of transferability of skills. It was very useful to know management concepts and procedures as I became a manager in an overseas context, supervising people of different cultures. Since then, in the Foreign Service, I've had jobs that entail both the practice of management and leadership, as well as the theory and concept of management and leadership. So it's been a back and forth.
Tell us some more of those experiences. Take us through your career and how you got here.
My first overseas position was in Dakar, Senegal, in West Africa, as management officer. Then I went to Bombay, India, came back to the Foreign Service to do leadership training at the Foreign Service Institute, then went out as deputy chief of mission back to Dakar, Senegal. I have to tell you that the Senegalese who had known me when I was a lowly administrative person were thrilled to see me come back 5 years later in a senior job. They were just so proud of me. This is, you know, general services officer made good. From that job, I returned to the United States and served as Deputy Assistant Secretary, then Principal Deputy Assistant Secretary for African Affairs. Went out to Nairobi, Kenya as ambassador, and from there to Guatemala as U.S. ambassador.
Now, I also understand in preparing for this interview, I learned that you recently received the Service to America Medal for your career achievements. Could you tell us more about this and why you were selected?
The Service to America Medal is given by a nonprofit, nonpartisan partnership for government, and the Atlanta Monthly Media. And what they are trying to do is to highlight the contributions of public servants. So mine was not the only award. There are many other wonderful people who have done terrific things. And the purpose, as I say, is to highlight contributions of public servants and appeal to people to join the public service. Our nation, our government, I think, is as healthy as the quality of our public servants, and it's terribly important that people see public service as both a noble and a wonderful way to go in their lives.
I hope you told the Singhalese about this award.
Yes, I'm sure they'd be very, very proud.
That's interesting. What does it mean to manage during a crisis? We'll ask Ambassador Bushnell to tell us more about this when the Business of Government Hour returns.